Number one, I always said it. I'm going to read for you the last part of the story. I read the first three parts in the last 3 weeks, and it's set in a housing state in Dublin, Myrtle Row, middle-class housing state, into which social housing tenants are surreptitiously moved, and they're called the O'Gartys. And Cormac is very troublesome, and he's just out of prison, and he decides one day to dress up in combat, and he has a sawn-off shotgun and a samurai sword, and he causes some trouble. He shoots someone, and it's just coming to the end now. And I just restarted where Charlie, one of the residents, and Brian, two of the residents, decide to challenge him because he's broken their cars. Charlie follows his neighbour down the street to confront Cormac. Charlie screams, lifts his Harley, and breaks into a sudden charge. But when he is still yards away, Cormac raises his gun and shoots him. Charlie staggers back, drops the Harley, clutches his stomach and collapses on the ground. Brian rushes at Cormac with a poker, swinging wildly, but his opponent ducks, points the sawn off, and pulls the trigger, but there is only a click. Cormac puts the gun back in his belt, then gestures with the fingers of both hands, "Come on, come on." Brian advances, swinging the poker in a wide, sweeping arc. Cormac backs away, weaving and dodging. That all you've got?" he says, then darts suddenly in, grips the poker, and jerks it up and back into the face of his opponent. Brian howls, sways back and forth, blood gushing from his nose. Cormac jabs him in the stomach, and when Brian groans and falls to his knees, strikes him on the back, and Brian crumples face down on the pavement. Cormac sends the poker clanging down the street. The sound has barely ended when in the distance a siren is heard. A police car halts at the entrance to the estate, its blue lights strobe and pulse. Two Gardaí get out, a man and a woman. Cormac reloads. The female Garda has a phone and calls for backup as Cormac walks purposefully towards the squad car. 10 minutes later, backup arrives. Both Gardaí are lying still on the road, a little river of blood joining their bodies. Residents have gathered in the street, some with hands over their mouths. An ambulance flashes into the estate. People are running around everywhere. They knock on Mrs. Watkins' door. The old lady opens a window. Her eye is just above the level of the window frame, her old fingers curled around it like a child's. "He ran down the valley guard towards the river," she says in a tremulous voice. Orders are shouted and three policemen head down into the valley. A few minutes later, shots are heard, and then later, some more. A strange silence descends. "This is the last straw," Mandy says over supper that evening. Terry lifts his paper to one side. "What was that?" he says. "They'll have to go." "Who?" "The O'Gartys." "Oh." Terry pulls back the paper and continues reading. "I'm going to call for another residence meeting with the council. We should have done that when they first came." Later on, Mandy's voice calls from the kitchen. "Terry?" Her voice is more relaxed now, almost cajoling. "There's a wine tasting in Dante's this evening. Are you interested?" "It's called Bad Grapes. Thank you."
Thank you. Okay, next up we have a Marcel Kruller, please.
Today I'm going to read a poem about a drawing, and it's dedicated to a woman who obviously likes to draw, like me. It might sound a little bit childish, but this is deliberately. So, I'm the dragon who rushed over the sheet of paper, high speed, with achromatic color. I was drawn by my little friend, the dragonfly, when she remembered me and the good ancient days where I could live for over 500 years undisturbed and honored. I used to surprise her with my fireworks, jumping out of the dark, illuminating the night with brilliant points of light like stars. And here I am, spick and span, captured by the wisdom of her hands and settled into reflection of almost all incident light.
For Amanda Marcel, Agassanish, Quirky Falter of Nia Mee Loughlin.
To explain things a bit, I spent one summer reading a lot of accounts of the effects of the famine and the collapse of society in Ireland as a result and the effect of that on the feminine. And I was living in Colmar at the time, and you know, you've got potato drills and everything from that time. So it really had a presence for me, and it's fairly loaded when you eat the spud. On Il Omat Kuntas Ramartha Moor Later, Mishinamitra, Ocris Fevris, sorry, I can't read this here, Ocris Fevris. Is Imrica, Untala Orsa, Asalia, this dream fit of wood, Obre Loka, Drovas and Isher Iller Kutubber, her fortune is Doshun, Tree Ren Bile and Drav, Tinavelton is Brathreda, or he is living a light, cold, the one off Asa. And so in Bortach, Bortach and Roin, Gay Egioni, Corrin and Numeri Lina, Luna Tarpatia, Bean Fladig, Barnig, Iscornis, Minoin, and Emma Fame, San Liam Cookfisha. Shachanim and Prata Agedach, Ados, in Iher Portic, Frid Agedu, Alte Crema, is Mograini of Galaco of A, Rowling Wish. Rishin Hinde, Rishin Sheena, Loch Dainis Tass, Milne Braina, Avlanan on Chorus, Pastin Hidoile, Idoile Migraine, Fuseline Gorka, on Graine in Omlaine Ervaile Sleite. Ach, o Aung Ikele, Crede Luna Cred, Elin Prati Ishtaps Chorus, Prati Roast and Ushkeloga, Ervaile Lord, Malta, Mariam Gok, Lumitra.
On the honor of all August, land me the right, let Seamus Harrington. Going on holidays one time, dozed off and woke up, looked out the window of the aircraft, and white fluffy clouds below conjured up another image, so that's what gave rise to this. White out. The deep blue horizon alters to cobalt. Closer, the cloudscape is frozen. Unbolted sheets of cotton blend like crumpled layers of snow-flurried white down. Captain Scott, your dogged determination ponies. Through the snow-blinding glare, a faint sign of Fisher. Danger! How Amundsen or Crean would have skirted this silent abyss with their packs. Who in the name of the king would claim this heavenly plateau? Slow wisping genies swirl silver-grey to briefly obscure hushed plains. Do they secretly preserve unflagged food dumps of scurvy ridding plenitude? Hypnotic drone of engines, a ragged hole opening. There, in astonishing clarity, the flat ocean of indigo. An upper case W as a pair of powerboats in line abreast unzip two wakes, cavitating gashes angling out from the coastline 7 miles below. Away offshore, the bulbous bow of a tanker bruises her sluggish furrow to dislocate thousands of tons of jade turmoil. Speared on the lattice mast, a bear-shaped shadow spanning a ribbon of summit road. As the cloud thins out, suspended below us, an exact replica of this silhouette. At an oblique angle, a polar bearskin duvet, still as a Frank Hurley shot. Without warning, redrawn over all by furtive Mother Nature, the covert veil of white lace. Thank you.
Gormagal Seamus, and next we'll have Fiona O'Toole, please. Okay. Fiona O'Toole. Apologies.
Alright, this is for a dear friend who I've never actually met, and this person lives on the other side of the Atlantic. I break down for you. I know her unlike any other. Miss, I know I cannot save you. I know earnest tears for you. You will hear me home, home that you inspired.
Next we have Zara Martin.
I donned the gas mask that my grandmother had during the war when she was just 14. When the cold rubber touches my face, I am transported back in time. Not just to shell-fearing Cove, where my family pondered their fate, but to shell-shocked London, to the Blitz, to all of Europe under Hitler's thumb. Fearing, breathing in the pungent rubber, not seeing through the scratched plastic eyepiece, like my grandmother never needed, like many people needed, that they never got to become grandparents themselves. Their little bones mingled with the big bones of the rubble cities. This gas mask sticks to my face, but I, unlike many, can take it off again.
Her mother, and next we have Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Billy. This is called Leveled Music. Walking through the Marvel pathway, fully charging to the miscellaneous sky, travelling in unison to a dead beat. Life situations blossom and rot, keeping time close to a drizzling heart. Prefabricated answers, open windows, shared time, fine weather in course exams. Solid weaknesses and fair trade gesture, turning back to disappointment, praying for sanity, tingling with death on a vacant spot. The music runs itself, battery permitting, endangered headphones called to pass. In the mood for certainty, skipping to heaven, lasting a distance in a sober eye, breaking from tradition and line cut. Retribution from Benaldi, a closer shave. Letter of songs, cut the silver streak. Enduring reality one more time. Rushing bodies from a walking road. Stopping clocks all along the car park. Thanks.
Thanks, Rich. Ellie Menton, please.
Writing poetry recently, so all of my stuff is pretty self-reflective so far, and it's not very good. I tuck flowers into the parts of myself that are not as beautiful. I plant seeds into the gloop, listen to the shoots break the surface, and watch the leaves unfurl and petals unfold. They are pink, yellow, blue, something delicate to soothe what is otherwise harsh. They grow as I do, wilt, flourish, bud, bloom. I try to care for them, for when we each turn our faces to the sun, my heart swells, photosynthesizes, my soul is fed. I give bouquets to the ones I love, trail petals like breadcrumbs, wherever I walk. I am beautiful, colorful, gentle, joyous.
Great stuff. And next we'll have Eamon Prendergast, please.
I once could speak Irish. I went to an all-Irish school. You know, I have two words left at the moment. But this poem, I think, I go to the Aran Islands a lot, and I love it there. And I think the sea speaks both our languages. Okay? So this is a poem about the sea. The gentle rolling waves ebb in to wash away this lap of time and feed this desert sand with wine. Is it inward flowing or outward going? Did it start by moving in, or did it never just begin? Falling down with all its might, raising up a holy white, thundering in against the shore, trickling down and back for more. And in this silent, darkened night, its thundering sound, its lightning white, tells me more about this life. Here I stand, concealed, confined, trapped by passing time within my mind. Will never wash away a night, will never wash away a day. Still it's washing, day and night, the waters that come and flow away. I stand, I wash my hands in this life. I feel the reason for castles made of sand. There is no reason for castles made for man.
Charles Kirk, please.
This poem was topical last week, or was it the week before? It's about something that happened in Derry in the mid-60s, an exhibition of paintings by Vassarelli. And then on the other hand, there are other things that could be said. However, Vassarelli in Derry, mid-60s. Our ping-pong eyeballs did what was asked of them by the famous Hungarian painter and magician. Students, lecturers, clergy and gentry, wives and a few burghers, the usual crowd, looked and laughed nervously. This was before the 800-year men unfurled the Big Bang banner before it all fell out as it did, we saw and did not see imagery from a far off land, a rhyming prophecy. We viewed the upart bent, which was an unlikely portrait.
Ray Hanrahan, please.
As I'm going to read two, one is called It Is Difficult, it's kind of a...
Just one,
okay.
Press repeat
for time. Okay, in that case I'll do incense. Right, incense. Smoky, tickling my nose, making me think of faraway places and different times to the days drear. I was gifted an imagination that can travel on diesel fumes or body ore, odor or the tang of wintergreen and the sticks of incense burn out.
And now we'll have Mona McCarthy, please.
I know nothing about poetry, but recently I had a bit of trouble and I just started writing stuff down and it was very helpful. So then I'm reading it tonight. So, staring down the barrel of a gun, dealt this deck of cards, why is it so hard to find my ace? There ain't no trace. Tread a mile in my eyes, there'd be no trial, the jury's mine. Staring down the barrel of a gun, have I won? No, it's bigger, I'm holding the trigger. The match is struck, I'm out of luck. My soul's on fire, I'm on the wire. The road slopes low, so slow I go. I braid a rope to give me hope. Staring down the barrel of a gun, have I won? No, it's bigger, I'm holding the trigger.
Have a few haiku. The unsettled dog barks at his echo, bunches of ash keys rattle. I falter beneath the half moon, a fallen plate set back on its shelf. 5 a.m. streetlight, curtains of gentle rain part. Watering houses.
We have Kieran McCartan, please.
Set in stone, then there's kind of like, don't touch it afterwards. But I call this a survey, so I can just add questions to a survey all I want. So I don't know if this poem will actually ever end, but it's pretty short. There are a few verses right now, but I might tip away at it forever. A questionable survey. When your brain they don't dance in step anymore, and rhythm only makes sense to the heart. Does your bestowed vague sense of an end give thanks to a purposeful start? Does judgment of you as a whole represent each constituent part? How fair the reflection of light in your eyes? How well do you see in the dark? How dense the mist of your honor? How rooted ideals to the ground? When a heart cries or laughter breaks, how different to you comes the sound? What value have you for your spirit? How worthy your flesh by the pound? How do your eyes smile on the places you've seen? How vast the terrain left unfound? Who waits wanting as you cross it? Whose love's loyalty do you test? Who kisses your forehead at nighttime? Who blesses the soul in your chest? As it tries escape through a sneeze, who brings calm to your breath? Do you aid their growth in your waking? How peaceful your mind in its rest.
Per Margot Tiron, and last on the open mic we'll have Rob Urquhart, please.
I must stress to all present that no girlfriends were harmed in the making of this poem. My tiger spat and scratched and swore. She beat the ground and let out a mighty roar. With whiskers stiff and talons sharp, she scared me silly. She scared me daft. She chased me up and down a tree. And just when I thought that I was free, she lashed me with her velvet claw and rattled all the teeth in my lower jaw. I wasn't sad at that, so I punched her back right on the nose, and from her eyes the tears they flowed. But she stood her ground and she growled loud. I turned around and jumped about, and I flew as fast as I could flee right up to the top of a great big tree. But when I stopped and looked back down to the ground, there wasn't any sign there was a tiger around. I quickly shinned back down the tree. I searched as far as I could see. I looked up here, I looked down there. At last, I found my tiger's lair. It was a cave full of bright and beautiful things, with chests of gold and diamond rings and human skulls with teeth and hair. Eek! There was many a marvellous thing in there. Just then I saw where my tiger lay upon a bed of straw and fresh hay. The tears still coursing down her cheeks. She looked like she hadn't slept for weeks. But I crept in close with a quiet glide, and I lay me down there by her side, and she looked at me, and I could see this tiger woman really loved me. Tiger's eyes burning bright like a black moon on a white, white night. Tiger woman, so graceful and fair. I love tigers because tigers care.
So, Carmago Raff, well, it's Carmago Chigalier. We might see some or all of you, or one or two of you next week for the 10-year celebration. But before that, please, one last round of applause. Bula Bosmore, the Lulipur.